And then straight after that, I heard a series of tape lectures called the Bodhisattva Ideal, which we listened to in my first retreat. And again, I was completely knocked out by that series. And again, something about... I remember in that, I almost fell asleep in every talk. It was in a retreat and we were listening to these talks, and I think it might have been the afternoon. And I remember kind of almost every day kind of lying about, kind of a bit like that. And yet actually the material was so incredibly inspiring and electrifying, so it's quite strong. And for me, I suppose since then, that was 1977, early 78, that Bodhisattva Ideal has, to the extent that I've been able to hold it in my heart, been my driving force, really. I feel it's been my northern star, the northern star of my practice. So when, you know, obviously I go off in other directions sometimes, that's been what's brought me back to my practice and my path. And the heart of that Bodhisattva Ideal for me is the idea of interconnectedness. So as I said, I went to unpack that a little bit for you. So I think we can think of interconnectedness in three different ways. Well, actually there's lots of different ways to think of it, but I'd like to share three particular ways that I've been thinking about interconnectedness. So one's more cognitive, or even metaphysical. One's more emotional, although perhaps volitional is a better term. And the other is more engaged, and it's the sphere of ethics. So I'd like to look a little bit about how interconnectedness can, how we could look at it under those three kind of headings. So cognitively or philosophically speaking, it's the very heart of Buddhism, really. So the Buddha in his enlightenment had an experience. He awoke to an experience. Going even further back, when the Buddha set off on his quest to look for an answer to his experience of seeing the suffering of the world, before he went, he remembered an experience that he'd had as a child. Well, he remembered two experiences, actually, and one of them came a bit later. Before he went off on his quest, he remembered watching a ploughman. His father had land, and he remembered watching a ploughman taking a plough through the earth and upturning, along with the earth, upturning the insects and the little creatures that actually lived in the earth. A bit like that Burns poem about the moose having its wee hoof kind of upturned. The Buddha-to-be, is quite a young man, just looked and he saw all these creatures being, this insect life, just saw them all being upturned and losing everything in just that simple act of the plough. And he realised that all beings were like that, that all beings were churned by the plough of conditioned existence, and that that was dukkha, that that was suffering. That inevitably, however good life might be, dukkha exists, conditioned existence just throws you up again and again, like as the plough moves through your life. So he went off on his quest, and when he finally, as it were, attained Buddhahood under the Bodhi tree, it was an experience. As far as we can tell, and certainly as far as I can understand, it wasn't a cognitive... he didn't, in the moment of enlightenment, necessarily formulate it cognitively. It was, it would seem, more of a felt experience, of a realisation that went so deep into his being, it changed him completely from human to something human and more. And I can't remember the word that's used. I can't remember the word. It's often translated as compassion. But it really means to shake with or to vibrate with. And his experience, he talks of that experience. He vibrated with every living being in that moment. There was no barrier between him and the whole of existence. He just shook. He quaked. He vibrated with all beings. And in that realisation, he realised the dissolution of the barriers between self and other, between him and between all of conditioned existence. And he had a vision in which he saw how things arise and fall away. So of course that was then cognitively expressed in his teachings. I mean, I really don't know how, who am I to tell, but my impression is that in the moment it was more of an experience which he then, in time, made sense of and expressed and shared through particular conceptual formulations, formula. So the most basic description of that experience when he did come to teach it was the law of conditionality, or the law of conditioned co-production.